Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast, presents episode 699, End of the Outpost Road, recorded live on September 12th, 2019. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. I am your host, Duststorm.
And I am your co-host, Godzilla T.
And a lot more Outpost stuff has been posted. I think I'm almost done with all my Outpost stuff, so we're finally through the Outpost storm. Yay! Although not quite, because we actually have a couple more podcasts that we're going to be doing related to Outpost. But it's nice to have all the panels finally out there. Yeah. Some of you guys may have seen a tweet that was put out that might indicate what we will be doing for next week's episode.
No. Did you tweet something?
I did. I'm actually getting on the Twitter game a little bit. I'm trying to get back in the swing of things. If it's coming around the corner, I gotta step my game up.
Twitter still functions.
Yes. Twitter is one of the only things that remains functional most of the time. Except when that Cloudflare outage happened, 3 months ago or something? Let's start off with a little bit of housekeeping like we normally do. Yeah, Fragging Friday. How'd that go, GT? A good time.
I had a great time. Nobody else did. Included anybody that wanted to stream on Mixer.
Yeah. Xbox and Microsoft and Xbox Live were having some
Xbox Live. Well, I should say Microsoft's authentication programs were having problems last week, Friday. You couldn't log into Jack and actually access anything.
Yep, it was painful. So GT, I think, did Action Sack for how long did you play? Almost like an hour and a half?
I played for
2 hours?
No, I played for two hours. Minus my break, but
right.
I played some Action Sack. I played Fiesta. That's pretty much it. Yeah. Stuff you can play when you're the only one. I thought about doing some free-for-all, but after jumping into it tonight, I'm kind of glad I didn't.
Yeah. I was very much looking forward to Action Sack and actually playing with people, because it's been a while since I've actually played with folks. And then that happened, and it just kind of sucked.
Mm-hmm.
It was not fun. Just watching from the sidelines, and every 5 minutes I tried to sign in. Nope.
Yeah, I'm just truly amazed that I was able to log in. I don't know. But yeah, I had people in the chat that they couldn't get logged in either. They wanted to play, but they couldn't get logged in. We actually had a new person swing by. Bless their heart. I appreciate you stopping by. I'm sorry that you were unable to join us. I hope you try again this week.
Yep.
But yeah, it was bad.
It sucked. It really sucked.
I mean, people couldn't even sign in to jump in the party.
Mm-mm.
To talk. You know, nobody could do anything. It really
That was the whole... I don't think we could stream the Mixer either, because we got the stream key and everything, but we couldn't sign in the Mixer to actually get it set up to stream.
And I tried on my own, which, you know, when they first announced it, I'd already set my key up and everything. Well, I think I waited a few days before I did it, because at first I didn't think I had to, because, you know, my Microsoft account was already tied to Mixer, but apparently you had to do it regardless.
Yeah, they kicked it to everybody to go through because they were updating their terms of service and all the friendly policy.
Put a box on the screen, let me read through it, and let me say, okay, what part do they have to approve?
They have to make you watch the video, which you could just mute and put in another tab if you really wanted to.
What video? I didn't have to watch a video.
Yeah, there was a video that everyone was supposed to watch about keeping Mixer a safe place. And
oh, there was?
Yeah.
It didn't show me any video. Yay, I got to skip it. I didn't see it, so I don't have to do it, right? No.
I guess. You're exempt.
There's a reason my channel is marked as 18 plus, so just keep that in mind.
There you go.
I don't do anything degrading to other people, but there are comments made that are mostly directed to myself that sometimes come out loud. It's my internal monologue that just kind of spills out every once in a while.
I'm hoping to play a little bit this weekend, since Action Sack's at least in there for another week, even though it's not double XP. Be nice to play.
Yeah. Played some Warzone tonight. Some firefight. Working on my 152.
You play some...
Been streaming that also.
Warzone Assault?
No. Warzone Assault's only here 1 week in a month.
Right, but it's double XP.
Yeah, but it's not live yet.
I thought it's live tonight.
Nope. Warzone Warlords is live tonight.
Oh. Is it next week?
Yeah.
Warzone Assault? Oh. Wait, no, it said... The update that we read last week said Warzone Assault was supposed to go live tonight. They messed up.
Well, it wasn't live as of an hour ago.
Huh. Or
hour and a half ago.
Because I have a copy-paste straight from the update, and it says Warzone Assault.
Well, I'm not saying that it's not going live. I'm just saying that an hour and a half ago, it wasn't. Because if it was, I would have been playing that.
I think it's usually
live. Now you made me curious. I'm firing up my Xbox to check. It's all your fault.
No, if it's not there, I'm going to go to 343 and be like, yo, where's Warzone Assault?
Hey, man, come on. Follow your own list.
I need my quick double XP to rank up. I'm so far behind.
Currently, yes, Warzone Assault is there now. Okay. Where it wasn't before.
Because I thought the updates went out at...
Or I just totally blew seeing it.
Okay.
Which is entirely possible. But if I saw Assault, I would have been playing Assault instead of Firefight because, yeah, double XP.
Maybe your server didn't get the update quickly enough because Ericubu said he was playing Warzone Assault hours ago.
Yeah. Like I said, I don't know.
Regional server issues. We'll just chalk it up to that.
Or blind player.
Somewhere.
I guess I could just go look at the VOD of my stream and see if it was there.
Yeah.
Because there would be video evidence there.
Yeah.
But I'm not that concerned about it.
I might hop on for a game or two, depending on how quickly we get through the podcast tonight.
Well, let's start reading so we can get done.
All right. First, though, got to go over the achievement stream, and Laird was kind enough to help me out with some more Halo Wars Definitive Edition multiplayer achievements. Got three of them on Sunday. Got Living Loving Bug, which was getting a scarab in a reinforcement game. I got Freak on a Streak, which is gained at least 15 population from a single reinforcement wave. And then I got two bugs better than one, win a skirmish game with dual scarabs.
Yeah, that's a real tough one.
Just farm that one on easy. I have a few more that will probably go for on Sunday that we'll be able to get done. Laird said he only has two left, or I guess three multiplayer ones left, so we might try to help him get those, finish those off this weekend. And we'll continue to do the streak on Definitive Edition and probably hopping back over to regular Halo Wars to try to go for the general rank with Bobby kind of off screen. And for the streams, might hop into the Halo Wars 2 if I have any achievements left in there, which I think I might have a couple that might be streamable. And then the top-down shooters.
Sounds fun.
That's the idea. Yeah. So that's our update for the week. Let's go ahead and jump on into some articles. So last week, we briefly touched on the MCC development update. And I said we would come back around to the little interview sections and then the DuckTales and the Scoop because didn't have time to really go through all of them. So I managed to go through, dissect a little bit, and pick out some of the high points. Postums interviewed Michael Farney, who is the senior producer from the publishing team. And Postum asked him what has been the most challenging thing to do for the project as a whole. So far, it's been the memory constraints with the addition of the Unreal Engine 4 section and then all the additional features that they're adding in. There's a lot of different UI screens that they're also having to implement because of the PC-centric features that they're adding. So the field of view, the mouse and keyboard settings, and a whole bunch of other PC-specific things that PC gamers are used to having. Postum's asked if memory has been a problem just with the original Xbox One, or has it been an issue with the Xbox One X as well? And Mike said that memory is an all-around issue. They're trying to squash as many bugs as they can regarding issues, but one of the things that they're having to look out for is whenever they address memory concerns, they have to see if there's any regression issues that have cropped up because of that. So basically, them trying to remove stuff from the code, making sure that everything is still running the way it's supposed to, because if you fix one bug, you break or you create two more, as is the coding life. And they're also trying to make sure that all the games fit within their memory limit.
Yeah. They're making these games do stuff that they were never designed to do.
And they're in a lot smaller space than they're used to.
Yeah.
That's the big thing, is making it run in as tight a space as they can so they can have all 11 of these engines running.
That's a lot.
I don't know what the reason would be behind this, but I'm not sure why they couldn't just dynamically load the games into memory. Why not just have the main menu and the UI be there and then load the game engine in as the game is getting spun up? It might take a little bit longer
to load. Well, I think what they're doing is they're just loading the menu aspect of the game. And that's with all of them loaded up, it's just eating up the available memory. Because, you know, an Xbox doesn't have a lot of memory available.
It's 4 gigs.
And they're, huh?
It's 4 gigs.
Yeah, that's 4 gigs. But they have the entirety of the Unreal Engine 4 running. And then you have 10 other fragments of menus running.
But aren't all those menus kind of brought up into a top menu, and then the settings are basically pushed into the engine when the engine is called? Like,
I don't know, Dust. You're the programmer. I'm not. I play video games. I don't understand how they make them.
I know. I'm just
bouncing. I'm talking out stuff. My butt.
I'm just bouncing stuff off of you as I'm trying to work through this in my head. I don't know. There's some questions I wish I could ask, and maybe I'll throw some questions up in the Twitter thread or something.
I mean, I know the Xbox One, the way it works with moving from task to task, like from YouTube to playing a game to Mixer and back, is they basically spin up little virtual machines. You know, right. Each application is its own little virtual machine. That makes it possible for them to suspend a machine and then move on to something else. I don't know how they're doing that with Master Chief Collection. It would seem to make sense to do something similar to that, is have your main UI, which would be the Unreal Engine, you make a selection, the Xbox puts Unreal on pause and brings up the other engine, but it may not work that way inside the game.
Yeah, I'm curious as to how they're handling that handoff to the different game engines.
But seeing with matchmaking, you need to have those games live so that you can expedite player load times. That could be why they have to have the games loaded into memory.
Yeah. I don't know. It's an interesting question. I'm really curious as to what they have being loaded at any given time during the running of just MCC as a whole. And I would have to assume that they've thought of something like this already, like trying to offload as much of the game as possible without having to have it in memory.
Well, the way they're talking, it sounds like they're basically stripping the games down to name, rank, and serial number to get them all loaded.
Sounds like
just
it,
so yeah. We can have, you know, reasonable load times when, you know, we pick a task.
Trying to remove all the extraneous code that's not really used anymore or referenced or leftover compiled code and implementing efficiencies. Yeah, I don't know. It's one of those things that I have questions and I know I'll probably never get the answers to those questions.
Yeah. Well, unless you happen to go work for 343 in their development department, then you might get the answers, but then you wouldn't be able to tell anybody anyway.
Right. Postums also asks, what's been the best part of working on the project? And this answer kind of surprised me a little bit, but Michael said the best part was how quickly Reach got spun up.
Yeah, I have to admit, they did get the flight out relatively quick.
I mean, it was fast. It was just later than they originally intended to, like, well, from a public perspective. But I just thought it was interesting, the fact that they were planning to have the flights out so early, and then they slipped a couple of months, and then the answer was how quickly they got Reach spun up. I just thought it was an interesting coincidence.
Well, you have to kind of look at this from his point of view, too. He's been playing Reach on PC longer than we have. You know, they had early in-house testing not too long after they, you know, announced MCC coming to PC.
Right.
You know, they've been working on this. You know, they were probably working on it before they even announced it, or doing at least some preliminary work.
I know they were.
So it doesn't surprise me that Reach became playable quickly for them, at least. You know, it was a little slower for us. I can see how it would surprise you, but it doesn't really surprise me.
Well, the comet in of itself is not that surprising. Just the comet in relation to all them wanting the flight out early. It's just an interesting combo. But with how quickly they got Reach spun up and working, and then the consistent positive feedback that they've been receiving, also proving it on PC and hitting the performance marks they've been wanting to hit, has been a win for the team.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on to DuckTales, we're diving a little bit into the Reach campaign metagame. Taking lessons learned from the 2014 implementation of all the different metagame features that they added to MCC, so the things like the speedrunning scoreboard, the speedrunning leaderboard, the scoring leaderboards, all the segment run-throughs, and all the different things that they added there. They have a lot of different things that they've learned, and they're going to improve upon those for Reach. One thing I found interesting is they didn't mention improving those for the existing games. Mm. They just mentioned improving it for Reach.
Well, it's probably implementing it for Reach.
It'd be nice if they could go back and maybe fix some of it, if they can.
It may happen. You know, they may, while they're doing the port or conversion to the PC, they may find bugs that they can fix that will improve the game overall.
Hopefully.
Who knows?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We still got a while before it's complete, so.
Yes. Soon. Whenever it's ready. One of the features in particular that they're looking to make better for Reach is the mission segment tracker. So this is where if you're playing in MCC on one of the campaign games, you have a little bar that you can set a rival with, and then it shows you if you're ahead of your rival as far as time or score or behind.
Mm-hmm.
Originally, they said that they thought they had too many segments and that those segments were not clearly defined, and some of the segments would be completely skippable because of speedrunning techniques.
Yeah.
So for Reach, they're trying to make fewer segments for each mission and make it to where the segments that they have are not skippable. So take the 4-minute speed run on Long Night of Solace and give it, what, like 6 probably checkpoints or something? So making it through the first town, making it through the Marine holdout, making it through the power or the shield tower, and then making it to the end. So 4 segments right there.
Yeah, I don't even remember how many segments it originally had.
So I don't think there were segments for Reach as far as like campaign goes. Like there wasn't speedrunning tracking.
I guess I would say checkpoints.
Oh. Well, checkpoints are a little bit different because sometimes checkpoints are just based off of idle activity.
Well, yeah, a lot of the checkpoints are based off of getting something complete. You know, you clear a specific area, you get a checkpoint. You know, you do a specific thing, you get a checkpoint.
Right. That's true. One of the other things for Reach was, or well, not Reach specifically, but some quality of life. Well, yeah, this one is specifically Reach. Some quality of life improvements that they've made. There are 3 cutscenes in Reach that were unskippable, and they've gone and implemented it to where those cutscenes can be skippable. But there's some interesting bugs that come up with that.
Imagine that.
Yeah. So apparently, for Longness Saltless. Or, no, which one's the, when you go in space? Whatever that mission is. They had a cutscene from the transition of where you get into the Saber and fly into outer space. Well, so happens that with having the cutscene skippable now, if you skip the cutscene, the Saber would despawn and then you would just fall to your death every single time. So you would get the checkpoint as soon as you load, Saber would despawn, and you just fall.
Might want to fix that.
They're working on it. That was one of those interesting bugs that they found.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Gotta love the bugs.
It makes life interesting, that's for sure.
Uh-huh.
The last section that we'll go over is the scoop. You have another scoop to go through. This one is going to be specifically addressing the MCC user-generated content migration. So there's a 2-part process to the whole migration that we went through this past month. The first one is the migration of the file share data, which we did. So that was the game modes and maps. And then the second one is the migration of the MCC-specific data. That one's a little more involved.
Mm-hmm.
Copying of the files is the easier part of the whole process. And there is someone who will not be named. They value their anonymity, which is totally understandable. But that's been a lot of work on the service team to get that stuff working for the transition. But one of the more notable things about the whole process is Xbox 360s ran on PowerPC, and Windows 10, or Windows computers, and the Xbox Ones run on x64 hardware, which is your Intel and AMD. They don't have the same byte order, which means in the world of computing, you have binary, you have zeros and ones. Well, you can either read bytes from left to right or right to left. It's called Big Endian and Little Endian. Those coders out there. Those are reverse for quite a few things within the game. And it's not just a one-to-one conversion, because you have some fields that are a byte long, which is 8 bits. You have some fields that are 16 bytes long. You have some, or 16 bits, and you have some fields that are 32 bits, and yada, yada, yada. So each different piece of the game has to be analyzed and then converted to correct the Indianness of the data. And on top of that, there being compression of file share data. So whenever you upload something to your file share, it actually gets compressed and then uploaded to save space.
Yeah.
So that has to be analyzed for compression and then decompressed and then addressed for Indianness. So they have to go through all the different fields that are in that either map file or the game type file and make sure that all the values are converted properly. So if you have shields at 200%, it doesn't get swapped to being 20%. Or if you have a map that has a position data of a spawn point in a certain area by a blue flag, it doesn't get put beneath the map and over 1,000 world units in the other direction.
Mm-hmm.
So there's lots of trial and error and lots of very tedious checking to make sure that they're properly converting the correct values for the byte order.
Like I said, a lot of hand touching.
Yes. A lot. Now repeat this. A lot of trial and error.
Mm-hmm. So for the 9.2 million
files
that they copied, they're going to be busy for a while.
The good thing is, because they mentioned this about having to work with just the game engine itself and swapping the code. Once they figured out all the conversions they need to do for Halo 3, they could directly apply it to Halo Reach and Halo 4. So right now,
that's good.
They're probably just addressing the file share specific files and how to convert those to make them match how they store files within MCC. So that at least is a little bit less of a time expenditure to get done.
Mm-hmm.
Because they've already done a little bit of pre-work just from making MCC in the first place. But now they're having to go through and take the original files that were created and then convert them up to how they store files in the current version. All that fun stuff.
Yeah.
They also fixed the health pack bug. So there's a video that they linked from Nick Deli, and it basically goes into show how you can take damage freshly spawned, and then you can take damage after you pick up a health pack or regen, and you die quicker. There's actually a technical reason for that, and I'm going to read it because it's a little hard to summarize, so here you go. I fixed this bug regarding the health pack bug, and the video is Naked Eli, one of his friends. So it's normally 3 shots in the melee for kill, and then they test it out, and you get 2 shots in the melee, and you'd have 1 little sliver of bar of health left. You wouldn't die, but you'd have 1 little sliver of bar health. I went to go pick up a health pack, and then it took his friend only 2 shots, and then the melee, which should have kept him alive, actually killed him. Here's what happens. The reason this became a thing was related to Reach changing how head health works. You have different head and body health. There are individual damage sections for the Spartan or Elite's body as well as their head. The biped's head section transfers damage received to the body, but the body does not transfer damage to the head. However, there is no likewise mechanism for health to also transfer. When you pick up a health pack or a bunch of other things that can heal you, that restores the biped's body health. Or if you play as a Spartan, the recharge fraction, the red, blue, and yellow colors of your health bar, only applies to health recharge to the body. So the solver of both cases, health regen and health packs, or anything that can heal you, really, I ended up implementing a system which basically mimics the damage transfer functionality, but for health. So basically, if you get shot in the head, the damage would transfer to the body, but if you got shot just in the body, the damage wouldn't transfer to the head. And there's some other wonky stuff in there. Now, there is some intricacies to this. Remember, head health is separate from body health. You can have a different amount of head health than you do on your body's, or on your biped's body. Say someone only gets body shots on you. Your head health will stay 100% while your body health is, say, in the yellow. When your body health regens to the highest value of the yellow recharge fraction, it will also transfer health to your head. But your head already has more health, so it stays the same. But say someone is shooting you in the head while you play a title update game variant that has bleed through enabled. Then you're going to be taking damage to your head, which is then also going to transfer damage to the body. But then your body is going to recharge. That recharge will apply to the head now too. Didn't take enough damage for your health bar to go yellow? Good news, both your body and head health will regen to 100. If you pick up a health pack, the fact that your body is now recharged to 100 also means your head is now recharged to 100. So basically, they fixed the whole health issue.
That's good.
All that to say, it's fixed.
Well, I mean, you know, they're trying to be a little bit more open and transparent with what they're doing.
It's nice. We're going to jump into the MCC playlist update. This comes from Postums, posted yesterday. This one's focusing on Halo 4 Slayer in the category of 4v4 social matchmaking. They adjusted some map wipes across the Slayer subcategories and paired up some Slayer variants with maps to best suit them. Here are the changes. Infinity Slayer, 57% weight uses the refresh map variants with weapons on map and ordnance for power weapons. Loadouts and personal ordnance are enabled. For Infinity Slayer, they have it on Adrift, Abandon, Haven, Solace, Harvest, Landfall, Monolith, Skyline, Pitfall, and Vertigo. Team Slayer has a 10% weight. It also uses the refresh map variants. Loadouts are enabled, but personal ordnance is disabled. Team Slayer is played on Adrift, Abandon, Haven, and Solace. Legendary Slayer makes up the remaining 33% weight and uses the Legendary map variants with all weapons on map. Loadouts and ordnance are disabled and players spawn with battle rifles. Legendary Slayer is played on Adrift, Abandon, Solace, Haven, Shutout, Arc, Onyx, Landfall, Monolith, Skyline, and Pitfall. Looking ahead to next week's update, the Halo 2 Anniversary Ranked Hardcore and Halo 2 Anniversary Fast Slayer playlists will rotate out. On this day, all Forge maps in the Halo 2 Anniversary Fast Slayer will migrate into Halo 2 Anniversary's 4v4 social categories. Halo 2 Anniversary Hardcore is also rotating out due to low demand from players. Could return in the future if there is enough demand for it. On the Halo 5 front, we have Anniversary Throwback rotating in for Rock and Rail. And we've got Warzone Assault going live for the weekend. Both of those will be double XP if you're doing that 152 grind. And as GT mentioned earlier, we got Warzone Warlords in there as well. We've also got today's community update. This one is titled Outpost Outro. This one is posted from Sketch. And there's lots of really cool memories in here. And I think this would be a good time, and even though the scene's not fixed quite yet, to move over to our browser view.
Yay!
And take a look at that. We've got quite a few things, and as you guys have probably seen over Twitter and some of the Discovery dispatches, lots of great stuff has happened over these last 2 months. It's hard to imagine it's over. If there was another one, I'd be flying out to it probably today. So I'm happy that it's over.
I'm sure your bank account is too.
Yeah, there's a little bit of recovery going on right now.
No, yes. Party for dust.
Not for a while, thankfully. Lots of really cool opportunities, and we will have plenty of other podcasts talking about Outpost following. Next week, I'll go ahead and kind of spill the beans on this one, but we're going to have the Outpost staff actually on to do a little bit of a Halo Outpost game show. So we're going to have a completely fun time for episode 700. We're going to be playing the Outpost Discovery game show games, Wheel of Fortune, Family Feud, and possibly Match Game. We will reveal the results of the remaining survey responses that we did not show off for Family Feud at the Outpost. I think everyone will get a kick out of those. And we'll have a sampling of puzzles from Wheel of Fortune. And I think overall it'll be a fun time. Really looking forward to it. Just about everyone is on board with the idea. I think there's only one person I have not heard from out of the whole staff. And I just realized you guys, that's the browser. You guys can see that. But it consists of DJ Blue, Minolta, Nixie, Beef Angus, Xbox Insider One, Anthrax, Dragonite, Young Sweezy, and Bree. Bree X Bree. So hopefully we'll be able to have all 8 of them on there. And I'm thinking for Wheel of Fortune, we'll probably split that up into 3 teams of 3. So GT, you'll be able to be on the team. And
yay!
The wife and I are going to come up with a few more difficult Wheel of Fortune puzzles and password puzzles to come up with, because arguably we made some pretty easy puzzles for the attendees at Outpost.
Well, you don't want to make it too hard.
No, it won't be too hard. Remember, I am behind
for the normals.
Oh, yes. So it's going to be a really cool and fun way to do it. I got a couple of things I got to set up in order to get it there, but hopefully it'll be a fun time. I do have the wheel back. We got that back this week, so I'll have the wheel back here and we can spin it for points and whatnot. So I'm looking forward to it.
But I won't have my button.
No, there won't be the button, unfortunately. I know. It sucks. I have to figure out how to do that. Other than just like
Wheel of Fortune turn based, so it doesn't really matter.
Right. Yeah, we'll see how it goes. We're also going to have a couple of follow up podcasts to it as well. So we're going to have a podcast discussing our what we'd like to see for future outposts if they decide to do it again. We also have the one guy who attempted the Pelican training solo. And I got to reach out to him and see when his availability is. We'll probably do that either episode 701 or 702, something like that. We're also going to try to have John Friend and DJ Blue back on to kind of do a post-mortem of what they thought or how they thought the Outpost experience went. And we'll also have very likely separate podcasts with all of the different panels that I did. So we'll have a podcast for Machinima, Foraging, the podcasters, the fan projects, and have everyone who is at all the different outposts in one big room, and we'll just kind of do a mock panel there, and we'll see how it goes. So at least about 8 more outpost-related podcasts potentially on the way.
Sounds like I'm going to be losing some sleep.
Hopefully not. Hopefully we can keep those a little bit shorter. Well, I don't plan on going over a lot of the like pre-flight stuff that we've done because I figure a lot of the people listening to this podcast probably know a lot about Halo already. So a lot of the intro slides were to gear people up who don't really know about Halo into those specific topics. So that's 30 to 40 minutes of content that we don't have to go through for a panel that is supposed to last an hour. But we'll see how it goes. You might be right. We'll see how it goes, though.
Yeah, sure.
GT's dreading it already. So first picture here, we have Jen Taylor and Steve Downs, who were at every stop of the way, meeting fans, signing autographs, hosting panels. Sadly, I did not get to attend a single one of their panels because I had my own panels I was hosting.
Yeah, that kind of tends to ruin it.
Yeah. And unfortunately, they were not able to get me scheduled with them to do interviews. So we did not get an interview with Steve and Jen, unfortunately.
Well, maybe next time.
Yeah. Had a few pleasant run-ins with them.
Yeah.
So, funny enough, both times were at locations where my wife was there. So we, Steve Downs remembered who I was a little bit from when we met during Halo Fest back in 2011, which was nice. So we chatted a little bit backstage while I was getting stuff set up for a game show in Philly. And then it just so happens that Jen Taylor walked into the same elevator that we were in Houston, one of the nights. So we had short little candid conversations with each one of them. And that was cool.
That's good.
Yeah.
Well, maybe we can set up something via Skype or something one of these times.
I do have plans to potentially reach out to them and see if they'd be interested in doing a Skype interview or a phone call interview, something like that. That'd be nice.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have the first location, Orlando, where Grimm was seated across from everyone else during the cosplay judging.
I think it's perfect placement for Grimm. He's been exiled.
This also was the foundation of the idea of Master Beef, although it was originally supposed to be like going through Chick-fil-A, but then the whole Arby's thing happened, and yeah, we got Master Beef.
Hey, they got beef.
They do. They have the meats. Arby's. Next picture although we have.
They really, really wanted to play on that, they should have gone with Burger King.
I only tagged Arby's. I didn't tag Burger King because do they have a strong Twitter presence?
I know. But their tagline was, where's the beef?
Yeah. So the original idea was for them to do it through Chick-fil-A. Mm-hmm. And then when Grim put the tweet out and then I tagged Arby's and that whole thing unfolded. Hey,
it worked.
Yeah, it did. So I got to see them dress up Grim and all the Arby's stuff. And he was saying that they shipped a 37-pound box of food packing material to make this thing happen. So all of the sandwich containers, the gravity hammer that they had, was the staff part was made out of straws.
Yeah.
And then they got one of the like Halloween helmets, and then they wrapped mm-hmm. that in Arby's foil, and the little vent things on the gravity hammer were cups. It was this thing was crazy.
It's actually pretty good. Looks like they down to put it. used a base of the Master Chief Halloween costume.
Yep.
And then they stuck the Arby's memorabilia or packaging to it. I think it looks pretty good. They did a really good job on that hammer, I thought.
Yeah, they really did.
Considering what they had to work with.
Mm-hmm. It's a pretty convincing cosplay, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a lot of fun. There's lots of cosplay photos in here just because cosplay is kind of the face of the Halo community as far as that Halo iconic piece.
Hey, I got to move down. He's making me hungry.
This picture right here was the very first community playdate on Friday in Orlando. Obviously, Major Nelson and Green Skull were there. I was back here working on puzzles for the first game show. This was literally an hour before I went on stage.
Nice.
I remember exactly when and where that was. These other couple cosplay photos are just amazing. This was one of the earlier on cosplays that we got to see. And then this one was actually at Anaheim. A Spartan having the whole
kind of an Achilles helmet vibe.
That it does. And then this one took Best in Show at Anaheim, and it's pretty much Best in Show, I think, for the entire tour. Elite. That was incredible.
Yeah, it is. They did an awesome job on it. Especially with all the other details that go with the costume.
Mm-hmm. I'll have to see if I can pull it up, but because staying after for VIPR, I actually got a picture of this Elite with Grim in the Master the Master Beef costume.
Cool.
So I have to see if I can pull that one out. Hamish Beamish made an appearance before the judging, which was kind of funny. Unfortunately, I missed that one because I had to run back to my hotel for something and then come back. And then this was at Orlando. This was the first, I think, 343 versus... Or no, this was the first 343 versus Hershen game. And I actually took this picture.
Cool!
And there was not really a meme, but a thread going around on Twitter. Sketch looks like he has his eyes closed in this picture. So someone blew that up and made a joke about that. Unfortunately, they went 0-3 against Hershen, which kind of makes sense because Hershen playtested the game and make sure everything is working right. So they probably had a lot more time behind the game than the 343 folks did.
I think they rigged it. They turned the light sensors off on 343's guns. That's how they won.
I actually have some footage of a few of those games. Haven't gone through it yet, but there will be some footage coming out here pretty soon. I also got I think I mentioned this before, I'm not sure how long ago it was, but I got a gun rail mount for a GoPro. So I have some footage to go through on that, which I haven't looked at yet. So I'm hoping that turns out well. We also got some more playdate photos. We've got one of Spider-Man who ended up being killer at Griffball. Happened to be on DJ's team as well. Also, Make-A-Wish. Ethan was this guy's name, and he was able to come to Outpost and get to meet a whole bunch of different content creators and folks from the studio. And you can see Sketch back there photobombing him. But he had a wonderful time. Got to meet him for a little bit. Really nice guy. His whole family was really nice and really cool to meet. He also has the tour record of beating Crossy Road. So he did not die once, and he managed to beat Crossy Road, which is a mini game for those who don't know. He beat it in 2 minutes and 40 seconds.
Wow.
Yeah. That's impressive and unheard of, apparently, because he was the only one to do it. There's also some very iconic panels. So this one was Marcus Leto and Sparth talking about some of the design concepts behind the Master Chief armor. Apparently that panel was really well attended and very informative. Fortunately, I had to miss that panel too, because I was wrapping up a panel when this one started. I hope I get to see VODs of some of these panels, because I missed a lot.
I would like to see him too.
They also had a panel with Frankie and Max Obermann, who is now part of Certain Affinity, and they talked about their origin stories behind Halo 2 and Halo 3 multiplayer, which was really cool. And we also got to interview Max Obermann, which we'll be playing this after we're done with this article, so stay tuned for that. It was really cool to actually interview him. There was also another panel that they did in Chicago with Frankie, Marcus, Tim Dodabo, and also Sketch and Carlos as well. And they talked about some of the characters and Halo legacy stuff within the franchise, which, again, I had to miss that panel. And then a really cool just kind of sum up of Outpost here with the cosplayers, attendees, Steve and Jen, Owen and Hazel. Just a really good way to round it all out. And we also have a couple of tweets up here. First one is, people may have seen this recently, but this is where Sarah tweeted out some people in the Covenant Escape getting surprised by an elite in the Covenant Escape chamber and seeing the worker, like the actual Halo Outpost worker, get freaked out by the elite, which is pretty funny to watch. Play with volume on. It's worth your time. Got some mini cosplayers as well. Some kid cosplayers, which were really cute. Some more. Actually, all these tweets are cosplay related. I just now realized that.
You up?
Huh?
I'm sorry. I was watching the video.
Yeah. It's a fun watch. At the bottom here, Grim has a little note for his experience with Outpost. He was able to make the Orlando, Houston, and Anaheim outposts, and both Sketch up above in the article and down here both mentioned how good the food was at all the stops, namely the barbecue.
It's always great when there's good food.
Mm-hmm. And it looks like barbecue got the most shout out, so yay for Texas.
Yeah, they need to come to Kansas City to get some barbecue.
We need to come to Kansas City to get some barbecue.
Hey, man, barbecue. You show up, I'll buy.
All right, make it happen. Road trip 2021, we'll make you a stop. So that's it as far as the Outpost content goes.
By the way, that offer only applies to Dust.
Ah!
Not the rest of you. Just wanted to point that out before I start getting people knocking on my door.
That's a good point. Couple other smaller sections in this update. We've got first the Halo Master Chief Collection update. They are working on the next flight, which is going to be bringing PvP to Xbox for Reach. So they're currently in Ring Zero testing for that. But if everything else goes according to plan, and kind of basing on the previous flights, we could see that within 2 months, I would say. Maybe as early as a month. We'll see how that goes.
Fingers crossed.
UGC Classic happened this past weekend in Atlantic City, New Jersey. We've got a new reigning champion as far as Halo titles go. Granted, it's a smaller tournament, but Lux Gaming was able to dethrone Tox and took number one spot in the Halo 3 4v4. So congrats to Lux Gaming for taking that. There were quite a few other side tournaments happening as well. There was a Halo 3 FFA tournament. Ryan Noob took home that for the Halo 3 FFA. So congrats to Ryan Noob. There's quite a few common names in here that you'll see if you take a look through this. There's a Halo 5 2v2. And this came down in the finals for Shotzi and Renegade versus Cyan and Neptune. And Cyan and Neptune became victorious. They had a full 14-game series for the grand finals.
Wow.
Yeah, that's nuts.
That's a lot.
Mm-hmm. 14 games. Two best of sevens. That's some good Halo right there. And then there was a Halo CE 2v2 playing on original Xboxes and on CRTs. And this one was taken by Legend and Skills, otherwise known as Patch. I'm not familiar with those names. Familiar with the other ones, not those. And at the bottom of this update, because the rest of the stuff we've pretty much already talked about, there's a little bit of a mailbag section. So the first question here comes from Desgiras, and they ask, does the MCC team plan to add adjustable view models for guns? Short answer is no. Graphics asked, although I'm not sure there's a ton of time anyways, what's 343's idea and stance of competitive Halo moving towards PC? Tashi answers this one and says, pretty much, when MCC comes to PC, they'll have some events and tourneys to kind of test the concept of doing competitive on PC, but they're going to kind of wait until they can actually prove it out and see how it goes. For me, I'm seeing competitive Halos probably stay Xbox, or if it goes PC, staying controller, just to kind of keep that playing level playing field maybe a little bit more. And that's just kind of classically where it's been.
And, you know, Halo has always been, competitive Halo has always been associated with, you know, Xbox, you know, the console. Because, you know, Halo CE and Halo 2 are both available on PC. Granted, they were ports, which didn't translate as well. You know, they weren't specifically tuned for PC. So, yeah, I can... I don't ever really remember anybody running tournaments with those versions of the PC or those versions of the game. It was always the Xbox version. So,
yeah.
I mean, at least they're willing to try it and see how it works. So we'll see where it goes. But, you know, maybe it will take off.
We'll have to see. Atomic George asks why Cat and Emil were specifically chosen for Gears 5. Emil was kind of a easy pick just from the overall look and character detail.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of makes sense. And then they said Cat was a perfect fit for numerous reasons and is always the default female we'd use since she's recognizable and representative. So there's a short answer.
I thought it was her driving.
There's not much driving in Gears, thankfully.
Sorry, I just had to get it in there somehow.
Oh, the driving jokes. Jackson SX35 asks, what did Buck and the rest of Alpha 9 get up to during the activation of the portal at Voy and the battle for the Ark? Did they deploy to the Ark with the Master Chief and company or remain behind on Earth to hold the line? Kenneth Peters answers this one and says, Alpha 9 stayed in the Sol system, fighting the remaining of the Prophet of Truce occupation forces. Killer 10312 asks, I know you must be tired of flight questions right now, so let me bamboozle you and ask how your morning is going. And Sketch says it's going quite well. And no worries. That's for the flight questions. They're just as eager to get reach out as everyone else is. Last question here. Pyro Sitor asks, will there be potentially any opportunity for people looking forward to the PC releases of MCC to transfer maps and game modes from their 360 file shares? Myself and a number of others from the Steam forum were not able to log into an Xbox One to qualify for the transfer. Short answer is they don't have any other plans to do the file transfer. Never say never, but right now they don't have the plan for it.
There is a pretty good chance that the map that you want converted has already been uploaded.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying every map got hit, but if it was popular, it's probably already been converted.
Yes. If it had somewhat of a following, it's likely there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it was something that was still on somebody's file share, then yeah. Unfortunately, it just makes me wonder how many maps will not be transferred because that, you know, there was duplicates.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people had duplicates of the files on the file share. So they're only going to convert it once. There's no reason to convert it multiple times if it's the same map.
Depends on how they do it. They might just do a, once they figure out all the different changes they need to make, they might just say, okay, run every single file and all these file shares through.
Yeah.
So they might not even look at it.
Yeah, who knows? It depends on how much hand tweaking they need to do. But anyway, yeah.
Yep.
So there is a chance that the map that you want is already going to be there. So fingers crossed.
Yep. And then going back to the browser view, we've got not one, not two, but three full quality pieces of art. First one is a fan art from Haruspis. And on Twitter, he said this is a full version of the Chase Toll incredible depiction of the Greater Ark's destruction of, or the Greater Ark's destruction in Halo Mythos.
Mm-hmm.
And then we scroll on down here. Some people wanted some high definition cover arts from the books. So this is for Fall of Reach.
That actually looks really good.
It really does. It really does. Give me a poster print of that, baby. And then we move on down here. Some Halo Infinite concept art.
Mm-hmm. Looks an awful lot like a pelican.
Yes, it does. And that's it for the update. So at this point, we're going to head on over to the interview that we had with Max Hoberman during Outpost Anaheim. It's about 20 minutes, so enjoy the interview. We're at Outpost here in Anaheim, and I have the pleasure of speaking with Max Hoberman, who was part of the Halo 2 and Halo 3 multiplayer design team back in the day. So thanks for taking some time out of your day.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So give us a little bit of background on what Certain Affinity is as a studio.
Yeah, sure. So Certain Affinity is my company. I started it in very, very end of 2006. We started doing a lot of... Prior to that, I was working at Bungie for almost 10 years. And I started Certain Affinity. Actually, the very first project that we did was a DLC map pack for Halo 2. Just got out of a Halo 2 panel here at Halo Outpost Discovery. So very relevant. But I started the company. We ended up doing a lot of co-dev work, a lot of Halo games, a lot of Call of Duty games, others included, Left 4 Dead and Doom and others, but primarily Halo and Call of Duty. And along the way, we also did some small original games. And then in the past couple of years, we've shifted to a real focus on lead development, where we are the lead developer on some very big things. One very big game, I should say, and some other things that are not announced yet.
Sure.
So we have three projects currently going on. One very, very big game that we're the lead developer on. I can't wait to be able to talk about, hopefully soon. We have a tentative plan on announcing, but not quite yet. And then two different co-dev projects. They're also not announced.
Yeah, very nice. So a lot of folks who are very keen on Halo will know you from some of the ViDocs and the multiplayer design stuff that you've done.
Or they'll just recognize me like the guy who just came up for my signature said, I don't know your name, but I saw you in a ViDoc, so you must be famous.
Yes. Yeah. So how has it been going from actually being at Bungie, being part of a development studio who's really focusing on a particular game to starting something that's more, like you said, a supportive developer? Like, how does that really fit within kind of the gaming industry? Because I don't think a lot of people really see that. They see this developer develop this game, and they don't really see a lot of some of the supporting developers in that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely a change. I think for a lot of developers, it's a real change too, doing co-development. You're not often in the limelight. You don't get all the glory, but you're in there, you know, in the trenches, and with us often in the trenches, because a lot of our projects, we, you know, people have come to us when they had, you know, real challenges, when, you know, things, not everything was perfect, or they would not have come to us. Right. So it can be a little challenging. You know, a lot of our partners are very generous and give us a lot of credit, different degrees, but for me, it's more about making fun games anyway, so I don't particularly mind being a little more behind the scenes. For me personally, the shift to starting Certain Affinity was really a shift from me being a full-time developer, which I've been doing 10 years at Bungie, but only half of that was as a full-time developer. And prior to that, I was running our community team and part of our publishing team when we were self-published and all that. So starting Certain Affinity was a shift for me where I really became a businessman first and foremost. I really haven't personally, I actually haven't been a designer or a developer for World Certain Affinity's about 13 years old. We're coming up on 13. And I haven't actually been a designer or developer in 13 years. I do every once in a while roll up my sleeves and help out on things. I'm certainly involved, but I don't do very much development or design these days.
Sure. How's that change been for you from a career standpoint?
You know, it's sometimes it's good, sometimes it's stressful. At the end of the day, I'm building something. I'm building a company, and I enjoy that. I find it hugely satisfying when we're, make progress and, when we're successful at various levels. So they're all system building problems and, social design problems. There's a lot of carryover because I used to do multiplayer and online social systems and that sort of thing. So there's different skill sets that come into play, and there's a mountain of things to learn, in the business world. But I feel like I'm getting pretty good at it. I don't know. We made it. Certain Affinity has been around, like I said, coming on 13 years now. We just crossed 200 full-time employees. Wow. And we've grown every single year since I started the company. Unlike most game companies, we've actually never had a layoff ever in our entire history. So clearly we're doing some things right. We've also shipped, 25 plus different products over the years. So so far it seems like it's working out okay.
And another fascinating part to that too is there's actually a wide variety of genres that you guys work with. It's not necessarily all first person shooters.
Yeah,
but it's a little mixed in.
Yeah, we're starting to become a little bit more diverse. I would say action games are absolutely the core of what we do, but it's certainly not all competitive multiplayer anymore. Although we still have competitive multiplayer,
right.
But yeah,
right.
Years and years ago we started branching out doing like firefight for some of the firefight stuff and all that. And probably not the primary thing that we did, but we always sort of dabbled in that. So doing co-op things, doing third person. The big game that we're making now is actually a third person shooter. I can't say much about it, but it's got some things about it that are very unique, uncharted waters for us that are a lot of fun. So and then we've dabbled in some smaller things over the years. Like we did a game called Crimson Alliance. It was a 4-player fantasy dungeon crawler. And early days we did a game, this little pet project, when I was actually still at Bungie, me and one of my guys wrote a little design doc, not at Bungie, but on the side, for a game called Age of Booty, a single player.
I remember that.
You really single unit, not single player, a single unit strategy game on console. I'm glad you remember it. That's awesome. Because
yeah.
That was a lot of fun. So we dabbled in some various things, but our bread and butter is big, high profile, high quality shooters now of various forms.
So you're kind of credited as really developing the matchmaking system that we see now in Halo, and kind of what's been adopted in a lot of other first person shooter games and some more online platforms. How is it like in kind of an age where the internet was still kind of being fleshed out and you're still having a lot of new networking technologies come in? How was that experience for you?
Yeah. When I was working on Halo 2, there were a crazy couple of years there where I was, once I'd become a full-time developer and I was just rolled up my sleeves and dove in sort of, I don't know if naive or fearless, but just dove into doing it. Right. And, one of many, many systems that I ended up devising was the matchmaking system where we decided, ultimately I decided to, with support obviously from the leadership at Bungie, to do away entirely with game browsers, right? The way things were done on console, or not on console, the way things
on
were done
PC.
On PC,
yeah.
And then had been adapted to console. I thought there was a better way. Other people agreed with me, and and that not everyone did. There was a lot of stress and a lot of consternation. Everyone liked the concept of matchmaking. A lot of people, I'd say the majority, even inside of Bungie, actually hated the idea that you didn't have the choice and that we were just going to go matchmaking as opposed to going like the Blizzard route where, which kind of is have your cake and eat it too at the time. They inspired the matchmaking that we did, was looking at what Blizzard was doing, but to go and say, and this is all we're going to do. The problem is I had to do that because I didn't think it would work if we didn't do that. I didn't think we could get enough people to try it, to give it a chance, to have the critical mass of population using matchmaking to make it actually work. So to have anything else except for matchmaking was sort of dooming matchmaking from the get-go.
Sure.
Never really giving it a chance to thrive. So yeah, those were fun days, but my confidence level was really high that it was going to work and that it would become the de facto way of playing. I don't know why my confidence level was so high, but it
worked
was.
Out.
Hey, it worked out, right?
Yeah. I think every Halo fan will say that matchmaking is a great feature. So
yeah, I hope so. I mean, everything is trade-offs. You can't, you know, sure. there's no perfect system. And perhaps if I'd been able to predict the player counts for Halo, you know, perfectly with ultimate confidence, you know, it might have opened up some other avenues. But we were also so constrained because we were just talking about this earlier with someone. Everyone assumes that multiplayer and online was the real priority for Halo 2. Absolutely not. Single player was the priority, and we had to scrape by on the multiplayer UI online side with very, very exceptionally few resources. I'm talking about like maybe 5%, no, certainly no more than 10% of the bandwidth of the developer, you know, the development team. And so we just had to, you know, there was very little, very big plans and ambition, but I had to be very selective about what I actually, you know, chose to focus on and implement.
Yeah, it's really cool to see how a lot of the multiplayer stuff really took off because of the online capabilities with Halo. So that has laid the groundwork for the competitive stuff, all the, well, I guess kind of more the matchmaking customs perspective as well, because if there wasn't that
online, all the way back when we were doing all that stuff, all the way back, we basically invented the friends list, what you press your guide button now and bring up and see your friends and
yeah, send them messages, Xbox Live.
Send them game invites, send them, you know, to see their status. Those are all specs that I actually wrote and handed to the Live team to say, this is the service that I would really like for Halo, pretty please. parties included, you name it, all that stuff started with Halo 2 and mostly my crazy vision, certainly input from a lot of other people, but I had a pretty clear idea of what I wanted the online experience to be, and I ran with it, and a lot of people inside Bungie got behind it, and yeah, we certainly changed the way that people play games on the console online.
I mean, maybe my credit's misplaced, but I kind of credit you for a lot of what we see as far as Xbox Live and matchmaking is today on console.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it all started, and the Live team took what we did, and they liked it so much, they made it mandatory that other people do. I mean, not just matchmaking, but a lot of things, actually, that we were doing. So, but yeah, you know, it was still a partnership with the Live team. We could not have done, Halo 2 could not have, online could not have existed without the Live team, you know, being willing to actually implement all these back-end services sure. to support these crazy things we wanted to do, like host migration. Obviously matchmaking is a part of that, but it's sort of a wrapper for so many other things. It's kind of mind-boggling, the complexity. And not surprising that I feel like to this day, Halo 2 still would be considered the quality, the scope and the quality. So to this day, Halo 2 would still, I think, be considered the scope of our online feature set, and the quality of those features could probably hold its own with many, many modern online games.
Yeah.
which is kind of crazy if you think about it, because that was what, 2004? Yeah, wow, that's just shows you how monstrously complex it all was.
Well, you had the vision for it too, so that's great. And it does kind of suck because I know there's some people that still want the clan system back and be able to do that.
Oh, I had my plans for clans in Halo 2 were extensive. I had such awesome plans, and we couldn't implement all the front end. The Live team actually implemented all the back end support that I needed to do all the crazy things I wanted to do. Things like there was a way that you could issue a challenge to another clan, and you would in the challenge you would specify the parameters, like kind of like a duel, right? We challenge yeah. you to this match with these, you know, this map and this game and these parameters and these settings. And you would actually go in kind of like setting up a custom game, and then you would fire it off as a challenge to another clan.
That's cool.
And then the other clan could accept it. There were time slots. You would choose your time slot, and then it would be like matchmaking. You just show up like 15 minutes before your time slot, and you would see in the list, there's your clan match ready to be played. Go in. It's all going to be automatically configured with your settings that the wow. challenge had been issued in, and it's going to run like a match made game. That was part of my plan for Halo 2.
It sounds like an awesome plan.
I don't know if anyone does that sort of thing, even today, right?
Yeah. I mean, the closest thing I can think of is the was it the tournament mode in Xbox? Like, there's only four games that support it, and I think Halo Wars is one of them.
Yeah.
Forza is another one.
I had a whole tournament mode planned for Halo 2. Again, the live team implemented all the back end. I posted that on Twitter. I sometimes post some of these old tidbits on Twitter from Halo 2 days and a little Halo 3 too. And I posted a link to, after we ended up not implementing clan or tournaments in Halo 2 because we just couldn't handle the UI workload implementation wise. But then the live team went and patented my design because they had implemented all the back end for it. And then I think nothing ever came of it. But I had some crazy ambitious plans, but sure. I also prioritized correctly. I remember the very first time we sat down with the live team and they were saying, man, this is a lot of stuff. And I was like, all right, well, I'll tell you what my priorities are so that you can, you know, also prioritize accordingly. Unfortunately, tournaments was at the bottom of my priority list and plans were not at the top. So
I think we got the best benefit out of it. It's what it sounds like.
It worked out okay, right?
Yeah. Well, and seeing how all those features are still in use today.
Yep.
I think it works really well. So with your history in the gaming industry, what are some of the things that you have seen that are kind of the biggest changes that you kind of weren't expecting or have kind of changed the name of the game as far as it goes for game development?
I feel like games have gone down a path where they become more hyper-focused, hyper-specialized, where one game mode can become a game. Things like PUBG, of course, once they take off, Fortnite, even once they take off, they can expand and go bigger. But back in the day, you sort of had to do it all. It was very difficult to even think of being a multiplayer only game, even with all the breadth of options and modes and everything else was kind of suicidal from a business standpoint. And now the insane success that you can have when your entire game really is designed around one mode or even one map exclusively, it's kind of crazy. It just never would have worked in the past, I don't think, or if it would have, nobody thought of it or had the balls to do it.
Yeah.
So there's definitely a trend there. I mean, it's kind of interesting because the scope of work is much less when you're looking at, you know, hyper-focused, you know, one map, one mode, those sorts of things. So it creates opportunity. Easier for new things to break out, new hits and successes and all that. But at some level, I'm still a bit of an old school developer. I'm not sure I've entirely wrapped my head around what to do with that information.
Sure. Sure. Well, and kind of to that comment too, I think there's quite a few of those games that leads to a little bit more quicker development time. You see a lot of alpha or like pre-releases where people get in on Steam and then they get grandfathered in or something like that.
Yep. Yeah. And the there's systems that allow you to do this very easily where, you know, back in the early Halo days, we had to invent the systems. I remember we told for Halo 2, we told the Xbox Live team that we wanted to do essentially internal beta testing. And they said, we don't support that. we don't really have a way to do that. So we had to convince them to develop a way to do it. Right. I mean, that was trailblazing for sure. But shocking the number of things that the benefits that people have today, including the game engines too, right? Back then, you know, very, very few off-the-shelf tools and very few off-the-shelf game engines and all that. So like CertAinfinity today, right now, all three of our projects are UE4 based, right? So the tool set has just matured to a point where we're, you know, the engine, or it's like, man, this is fantastic. This makes things so much easier. And what we've done on the big game that we're working on relative to the, you know, relatively short amount of time we've been working on it is utterly astounding. It's quite impressive.
What's something that has oddly stayed similar? So kind of taking the opposite of that.
Yeah. Well, we were just talking a little bit about this on the panel that we were on, saying that so many of the ways that people play games on the console online really haven't substantially changed from what I rolled out all the way back in the day.
Yeah. For Halo 2. We just went through that whole history.
Yeah, enhanced for Halo 3. So I think, that's the first thing that jumps out at me. I guess that's good. Like I was saying, I think, it's good that those systems have stood the test of time and still work. I'm sure there are, you know, ways that things can be improved always, but, sometimes I'm shocked when I see that things are still working the way that they did back in the day. And sometimes there's changes that have been made that frustrate me, like the way that, this was way while back, but the way that the Xbox Live team co-opted parties. So on the one hand, they took what we did with the friends list or in the Y menu in Halo 2. They put it on the guide button. They gave it to all games, and the games didn't have to implement it themselves the way that we did. They didn't have to design it themselves the way that I did. But I thought that was awesome. That, you know, wholeheartedly support. But then they also tried to integrate parties, and in the process, in my mind, they kind of smothered the real values of parties. The way that I envisioned parties got kind of ruined, and I kind of wish we could go back.
Gotcha. For anyone who's interested in getting into game development, what's kind of your take on where they should start?
On where they should start? And start from scratch? Someone who just fresh out of the...
fresh out of college?
Fresh out of unrelated programs. A philosophy major, perhaps. Well, I hired one of those, or helped hire one of those ones who went on to be a lead designer. You know, there's so many tools available out there. It really feels like you just need to roll up your sleeves and get it out there and start making things, start building. You want to be a multiplayer designer, start building multiplayer maps, start, you know, designing game modes. Like, it's just, there's so much ability to do things hands-on. I think someone coming our way that wanted to break in the door, if they didn't have a portfolio to show us, whether it be design, whether it be, you know, 3D modeling work, texture work, animation work, you name it. No formal training required. I actually, for Certain Affinity, I mandate that we don't have college degrees as a requirement for our jobs. We put in the bonus category, nice to have. But honestly, I don't really care how you got your experience or your skills. All I care is that you got them, that you have them, right? So self-taught is fine. Honestly, it really doesn't matter to me. And then, you know, partner up with some people and make a game. Just dive in and do it. It doesn't have to be great, but it needs to show initiative, and it needs to show, you know, some technical chops, because at the end of the day, you know, don't forget that video games are software, right? Certain Affinity, we are a software company. Yeah. Someone wants to come make software in any role, you need a certain level of technical chops, technical expertise, and familiarity and all of that. So, I mean, your audio guys, you know, or gals, you name it. Just get in there and get hands on and start making things.
Cool. Well, thank you for taking time out of your day. Happy to see you here at Outpost, and hopefully we'll get to catch up with you in the future.
Yeah. Nice to see you again.
Yeah. And, likewise. And where can people find out more about your projects?
Yeah. So right now they can't, unfortunately, because nothing.
Your upcoming projects.
Yeah, announced, but, no, I appreciate that. Certainly keep an eye on our company website, www.certaininfinity.com. Or our social media. We've been more active lately in social media, whether it be Twitter postings, follow us on Facebook. We haven't really got our Instagram account off the ground yet, but that'll be in the not too distant future. But yeah, we've tried to be out there a little bit more now that we're working on our own products. You know, it's going to come in a tidal wave once we actually can talk about what we're working on. So, get in there early, get your foot in the door following us early. That's my advice.
Very nice.
Sounds very self-serving, but that's my advice.
Very nice. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, everyone. Hope you enjoyed that interview. And it was a lot of fun for me to talk to Max, and it was a really good time to chat with him. Unfortunately, his was another panel that I missed, but it was really cool to take a look back to how things were in Halo 2 during the development, and he was pretty much one of the main guys behind the whole development of the matchmaking system, what you know and love today within the Halo multiplayer. So
I think he was the matchmaking system.
Pretty much. That's kind of how I view him, more or less. It's one of those things that if you take a look back at how things were developed and that Halo 2 had its own implementation of Xbox Live
mm-hmm.
before everything else did, it kind of points to the fact that, yeah, he was the one that had the entire vision for Xbox Live. And yeah. That's now the foundation of what we have today.
Yeah, it was an early concept of that. You know, Xbox has definitely taken the idea and ran with it and mm-hmm. taken it to a whole nother level than where it's its humble beginnings were, but you know, Max just iterated on a system that had been in place for PCs and made it more casual for people.
Not as tedious. You
know, don't get me wrong. Being able just to pick from a list of servers is great, but you know, how many times do you hit a server that there's nobody there, or the people that are there are people you don't really want to play with, or either because their skill level's too low or their skill level's too high, or they're playing some weird game type that you don't want to play.
Yeah.
I mean, it added consistency to online play. You knew what to expect.
Yep. And it really set the groundwork for a lot of competitive multiplayer, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You had the PC Counter-Strike tournaments and all that stuff, but it really gave people a way to meet up with other people and really find other players just like outside your local community or outside your clan or whatever different server group you were with PC games, and really open that audience to a international stage.
Well, if Halo 2 hadn't come around, I wouldn't have met any of you.
I was going to say, I think there's a lot of friendships out there now that are probably a result of the matchmaking system, just matching up with some random person, having a good time with them, and then staying together for a couple of games, and then starting to just develop a friendship through that, which I think is cool.
One of the guys that I used to play, well, he doesn't play Halo anymore, mainly because he's got a life, you know. I met this guy when he was 14, 15.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's getting ready to graduate college.
Cool.
As an engineer. So, you know, I've seen this guy go through a lot of stuff. And I never would have met this person. All the people I talk to almost on a weekly basis, I wouldn't have gotten to meet.
Same. It's so cool to see how not just Halo, but games like Halo and the systems that Halo uses can have so much impact on a community and really create those friendships.
Yeah.
It's really cool. Something that they forgot, or Max forgot to mention that he wanted me to mention, is that they opened a new office in Toronto. So Certain Infinity is expanding and growing. You heard them say that they have over 200 employees now. Another little fun fact, they have not laid off a single person ever since they started the company.
Cool. My cat agrees with that too.
In the day and age of hearing about a bunch of layoffs and corporate shakeups and all that stuff, it's nice to hear that there's a company out there that is actually doing good work and is really supporting their workforce. So thank you, Max, for the interview. Really appreciate it, the time that we spent. And at some point, I hope we get to do another one in the future, whether it's another Halo Outpost or RTX or something down the road. It's good to talk with you. And if Bad Alley Cat's listening, thank you for helping set up the interview. She works at Certain Infinity now. Met her through Griffball Hub. And it was nice. She was nice enough to get the interview set up.
Cool. Thank you. Appreciate it.
So just to recap, next week we're going to be having our Halo Outpost Game Show podcast edition for episode 700. We will be giving out some stuff on the stream, not necessarily prizes, because not necessarily giving it to the folks participating, but for people that will be watching, we'll have some giveaway items. So if you want to drop on by, you might get the chance to win something. Future episodes will be coming down the pipe, some related to Outposts, some not. We're going to be looking for topic ideas again. I know we have a couple of topics that we would like to have on the show and get some guests on to talk about them. Things like Sprint, what we'd like to see in Infinite. We haven't had the Battle Royale discussion yet, so we'll probably have that at some point. We'll have probably our desires for what we would like to see with Outpost at some point. But if you guys have topic ideas, please shoot them our way. We're looking for all the suggestions as we start to roll out of the Outpost season and back into a regular podcasting routine. That'd be very helpful. We've also got our Fragment Fridays you can check out. That'll be happening tomorrow night at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. I'm not anticipating any other Xbox Live issues, but don't hold your breath.
You never know.
Don't hold your breath, pretty much.
It is Microsoft.
It is. We will see what happens. You can also check out the achievement stream that I've been doing with Laird and Bobby. That takes place on Sundays at 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Still kicking it off in Halo Wars Definitive Edition for the next couple of weeks at least. So you can head on and check that out over there. All the streams take place on Mixer, Twitch, and YouTube. And then you can meet us right back here Thursday at 9 p.m. when we do the podcast. A little bit of an update on our Spartan company. We are still working on those company accommodations. If you would like to help us out with the Achilles helmet, we are very close to our next commendation. You want to take a guess at how close we are?
I could, but I already looked. So why don't you just tell them?
Okay. We are 52 away from getting the From Downtown commendation, which is killing an enemy Spartan from long distance.
Got them sniper rifles.
That could be done this week.
Could be.
Could be.
It's a lot of sniping, though.
Warzone. Just calling us a couple sniper wrecks. We'll see what happens. It could happen.
We'll see.
We'll see what happens. I think we could do it. I think we could do it.
It'd be nice to have another completion.
Yes, it would. Next closest one is First Strike, and we have about 500 to go there. A little less than 500. That one's going to take a little bit of a while, but we're still working on it. And then the two at the bottom,
as always,
are still the two at the bottom. Killing Marines. We have over 30,000 of those to go. Warzone. And then Shoulder Bash. A lot of those to go. Not a lot of people use Shoulder Bash. So, yeah. Anyways, that's an update on our Spartan company. If you would like to join, head on over to podtackler.com/company. And you can request to enlist. And then we will have someone go in and approve you to join. You can also check us out on all of our social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We also have our Discord server, which you can come and join. Chat up with the rest of the community as well. And for our book choices for the next round, we are taking a look at some of the independent books. So I think the vote is going to be in between either Broken Circle or Battleborn, because I believe, isn't Shadow of Evantin a little bit more of a short story? Or is it more like a normal book length?
Let me look here. Okay. Let's see. Shadow of Intent. That was part of... Yeah, that was a shorter story. Part of...
Fractures? Fractures, yes. Or Tales? Okay. So we will be reading up on either Broken Circle or Battleborn, I think we'll make the next one. We might do a shorter story in between somewhere in there, maybe. We'll see how it goes. We'll see how things line up with all the different Outpost-related podcasts that we might do. If there is a break in there, then we might just say, hey, next week we're going to be doing this short story and we'll talk about it and add it to the news cycle. So if you've got Fractures, Tales from Slip Space, or Evolutions, keep those handy, because we will be diving into those kind of here and there as either content is not there and it gives us something to talk about, or if we just need to fill in some time. But will we have a poll on Twitter and Facebook for Broken Circle and Battleborn coming up this weekend, so stay tuned to social media for that. And I think that's all I have for tonight. Got anything, GT?
Nope.
All right. Well, thanks everyone for tuning in. Appreciate the time that you spend out of your evenings for those listening to the live stream. And for those downloading, thank you for downloading the show and listening to us. We will catch you all hopefully tomorrow for Fragment Friday. If not, right back here on Thursday for our 700th episode and the Halo Outpost game show. It's going to be a lot of fun. Hope to see you there. Until then, the amount of fragmented trucks.